All right, good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining. I'm going to go ahead and give it just a couple more minutes to give folks a chance to join. So just hang on for a couple more minutes there and we'll get started. All right, we can go ahead and get started. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining the webinar today. My name is Kim Wagner, and I have been with PJR for about 7 years now. I work on the Aerospace Executive Committee, and I work directly under Amanda Brown, who is our Aerospace Accreditations and Program Manager. Today, we're going to be talking about the AS9104/1 2022 revision. And specifically, how this new revision will affect our aerospace certified companies. So, PJR is currently in transition to this 2020 version of the standard. And this standard includes requirements for aviation, space, and defense QMS certification programs. And there are quite a few changes in that 2022 version. The previous version was from 2012. And specifically, we're going to talk about these four discussion topics here, which include new requirements for aerospace certified organizations, the future of remote auditing or virtual auditing, and new documentation submission requirements, and new audit duration calculations. So we will dig into each of these topics here and talk about how any changes will affect you as certified organizations. And if you have any questions, please feel free to type them into the questions tab there, and we will get to them at the end of the presentation. So just feel free to go ahead and type them in as you think of them. Okay. The first new requirement that we want to talk about from AS9104/1 is 85133, which states the AQMS standards, i.e. 9100, 9110, or 9120, utilized for certification shall be selected based on the organization's scope of certification. And the note here says, refer to the intended application of the AQMS standards to determine the selection of the appropriate standards. So what does this mean? The scope of your organization must match the standard to which your organization is certified to. So during transition, PJR will be reviewing all scopes and we will inform your organization if a change is required. So let's talk about then the intended application for each of these standards, starting with AS9100. And this is all listed in the standards themselves in the intended application portion of the standard, if you'd like to look at that yourself. But for AS9100, it says AS9100 is for the organizations that design, develop, or provide aviation, space, and defense products and services, and by organizations providing post-delivery activities, including the provision of maintenance, spare parts, or materials for their own products and services. So this is quite a broad range of organizations that will fall under the AS9100 standard. Then, of course, we have AS9110, which is intended for organizations whose primary business is providing maintenance or continuing airworthiness management services for civil or military aviation articles and products, and by OEMs with maintenance, repair, and overhaul operations that are operated autonomously or that are substantially different from their production operations. And lastly, we have AS9120, which is for organizations that procure parts, materials, and assemblies and resell these products to a customer in the aviation, space, and defense industries. So if your current certification scope is not aligned with the proper standard, we will rectify that during our transition, and we will let you know if a change is required. Okay, the next requirement we want to touch on is 85111. Which states CBs or certification bodies shall suspend certification and retain documented information supporting the suspension decision for any of the following conditions. A, when an organization fails to reestablish conformance within 90 days from the date the nonconformance was issued, or B, when an ethical complaint, e.g. code of conduct or ethical related nonconformity, has been substantiated with supporting objective evidence. So what does this mean? This means that all corrections to nonconformances must be completed within 90 days from the date the nonconformance was issued, or Perry Johnson Registrars is required to suspend the organization. And that suspension will appear in OASIS. Your status in OASIS, if this were to happen, would change from certified to suspended. So for example, if a nonconformance was issued due to the management review missing some required inputs, the organization then has 90 days to either complete a new management review, including those missing inputs, or conduct a gap review to cover those missing inputs. So basically, the correction for any NCR has to be completed within 90 days. So you have to correct that example or examples that the auditor found during the audit to bring your system back to conformance within 90 days, or PGR must begin the suspension process. In the previous version, this was within 60 days, so it's a bit of a change here. And then for that second point, if we are informed of an ethical complaint, we must investigate it. This could include requesting documentation, conducting interviews, by conducting a special audit, et cetera. For example, if we receive a complaint that non-conforming product was shipped knowingly without proper disposition or informing of interested parties, this could potentially result in suspension. We would have to, again, gather the objective evidence to support the decision to suspend, but it is an example of an ethical issue that could result in suspension of your certification. And in the same vein, 912 of AS9104-1 2022 states that AQMS certified organizations that have their AQMS standard certification suspended shall provide notification to their ASD or aviation, space, and defense customers within 15 days of the suspension. So if your organization is suspended, then you are responsible to provide notification to your AS&D customers within 15 days of that suspension. Okay. Another big change here, the standard no longer recognizes a campus, several, or complex structure. Only single site and multi-site structures are now recognized. So campus in particular is a pretty common structure that we have at PGR for our aerospace organizations. So if your organization is not currently a single or multi-site structure, we will be conducting a review and making the determination of which structure is appropriate for your organization. So PGR will inform your organization if we need any additional information to make that determination. And we will also inform you of which structure your organization will now fall under. So in a way, this kind of simplifies things by just having these two schemes now, single site or multi-site, but we're going to have to do a bit of work to ensure that all our organizations are now fall under the correct structure. Okay, Our next topic here is the future of remote auditing. So 8542 of the standard says where a physical location of a site exists and ICT is utilized, a maximum of 50% of the audit duration may be conducted remotely. And ICT stands for Information and Communication Technology. So this basically means that for a physical site, the audit can be conducted 50% of that audit duration. Now, what does this mean? So once the transition to AS9104/1A is complete, conducting any audit of a physical location 100% remotely will not be permitted. So through the pandemic, we had conducted quite a few audits 100% remotely, but that will no longer be possible with the new version of this standard. Oops. Now, however, though, as this requirement here says, you can still have 50% of that audit duration conducted virtually. Now, 8543 says where a physical location of a site does not exist, i.e., a virtual site, and it references IAF MD1, ICT shall be utilized in accordance with IAF MD4. So, what is a virtual site according to IAF MD4, MD1? A virtual location where a client organization performs work or provides a service using an online environment, allowing persons from different physical locations to execute processes. And note one says a virtual site cannot be considered as where the processes must be executed in a physical environment. For example, warehousing, physical testing laboratories, installation or repairs to physical products, manufacturing. So if there's processes that have to be executed in a physical environment, then it cannot be considered a virtual site. And note two says an example of such a virtual site is a design and development organization with all employees performing work located remotely, working in a cloud environment. That type of example would be considered a virtual site. Note three says, a virtual site, e.g., an organization's intranet, is considered a single site for the purpose of calculating audit time. And note four says, for further information, see also IAF MD4, the use of information and communication technology, ICT, for auditing assessment purposes. And you can access IAF MD4 online on the IAF website. So, what does IAF MD4 indicate must happen? So, for the past 3 years, all of our remote auditing has been done using ICT and following the IAF MD4. So, we'll continue in the same manner as if it was a virtual site. So, a form we need to be completed to ensure that the organization has the capabilities and infrastructure for a remote audit to take place. And if it was determined that the organization was capable, we would then set up a live stream audit on GoToMeeting. Or if your organization preferred a different platform, we would consider using that as well. And audit duration is calculated the same as for a physical on-site audit. So if you do have a virtual site, then ICT would be used to audit that site. I'm sure some of you have had virtual audits in the past year, and so you would follow that same process in approving that audit to be virtual by having you complete a form that we would then review and determine whether your organization is capable or not of supporting a virtual audit. Okay, and the next topic here is new documentation submission requirements. So 9110 of AS9104/1/2022 says that AQMS certified organizations shall provide data required by the standard to their CB prior to initial surveillance and recertification audits for the completion of the OCAP analysis. And AS9101-2022, while this standard has not yet been released, there is a requirement in it stating that the documentation requested prior to the audit must be received by the certification body 90 days prior to the audit. So what does this all mean? CBs must now complete an OCAP analysis, which stands for Organization Certification Analysis Process, in order to determine the audit time duration. So while we can schedule your audit prior to receiving the new required information, once that information is received, it may affect the audit duration. The audit duration may change once we review that information. This information is required to be verified once the auditor is on site during your audit. Therefore, we don't want that information to be submitted too far in advance. However, in that new AS 9101-2022 standard that's to be released soon, there is a requirement that states that the documents need to be submitted 90 days prior to the audit. Therefore, we want that information to be received approximately 3 to 4 months prior to your audit due date. That way, it's pretty up to date and will meet that 90 days requirement, and it's not going to be too old of data once the auditor is on site trying to verify it. So what your scheduler will do is send you the request for that information approximately 6 months prior to the audit. This way, hopefully you'll have enough time to gather that information, get it to us so that we can then get it to the auditor and also conduct that OCAP analysis. So here is a list of the required documentation that you will need to submit 3 to 4 months prior to the audit. And this is in some ways similar to our F-08 process that we do for aerospace, which you may have some experience with, where we will request some pre-audit information. But this information is mandatory to be sent into us. And it includes a copy of your interaction of processes, a copy of the internal audit program or procedure if you do have an internal audit procedure, a copy of the latest internal audit reports and findings, a copy of the latest management review information, a copy of on-time delivery goals and actuals, a copy of conformity of delivered product or service goals and actuals, customer satisfaction goals and actuals, a copy of customer complaints or feedback, a copy of any product-related safety issues if applicable, a confirmation of the number of sites, confirmation of the number of employees per site, confirmation of scope of certifications, and a list of additional aerospace standards utilized, such as AS9146, which is the FOD prevention program standard, or AS9102, which is the aerospace first article inspection requirements. So again, this is the information that we will need submitted to us 3 or 4 months prior to the audit, and then we will review this information in order to complete that OCAP analysis. And this leads us into our fourth topic, which is the new audit time calculation. So a couple definitions here. Audit duration is defined as the time from the opening meeting to the closing meeting. So it's all that happens between those two meetings. That's what we consider the audit duration. And then the audit time is then all of the on-site and off-site time. So it includes not only the audit duration, but then the off-site time, which could include the planning of the audit, the auditor creating that audit plan, report writing, again, that auditing time on site or virtual, and then any NCR management post audit. So it could include the auditor assisting you or guiding you to complete your nonconformity reports and acceptance of those nonconformity reports. Okay, and so all of that required documented information that we previously went over will be used to determine the risk level of your organization. And we will utilize this table 7 here that's included in the AS9104 standard. So as you can see, there are certain items here that we have to review, and then we'll determine the risk factor related to each item. So for instance, for internal audits, we will review that and then determine if, based on your internal audits, there's a low risk there, a medium risk there, or a high risk. For your on-time delivery information, we'll take a look at that. And then if you're exceeding your on-time delivery goals, you'd be considered low. If you're meeting them, you'd be considered medium. Medium risk. And if you're not meeting your on-time delivery goals, then you'd be considered high risk. The same goes with your conformity of delivered product or services information, your customer complaints and feedback information. And then we also need to take a look at your previous audit report, and we'll take a look at those PAIRs, or process effectiveness assessment results. And we'll look at the lowest level PAIR that was issued at your previous audit. If it was a 5, then it's considered low risk. 3 to 4 considered medium, 1 to 2 considered high. And then for each of these risk factors, there's given a risk score, and then these are added up to give a total risk score. So if added all together, we get a 36 to 25, that's considered high, 24 to 12 is considered medium, 11 to 6 is considered low. Okay, then it gives an example of here of how each of those risk scores is added together to give a total of 15, which would be a medium risk in this example here. So again, that document information is extremely important because we have to use it to determine this risk level here for your organization. Okay, and then we have Table 8 in the standard, which shows us what the starting audit duration is going to be based off your employee count. So as you can see here, based on the number of personnel, it shows us the initial audit duration, which is your stage 1 and 2 audit, the surveillance audit duration, and the recertification audit duration. And then once we have that starting audit duration that's based on your employee count, then your organization's risk level will be addressed in the following manner. If your organization is determined to be low risk, then there's a 10% reduction in the audit duration. If you're considered medium risk, there's no change in the audit duration. If you're considered high risk, then there's a 10% addition. And again, this is based on that review of your document information where we come up with this risk factor here. So, in addition to that, we also look at site-specific processes. We review those, and this could also result in a reduction to a site's audit duration. Therefore, it is really important that your interaction of processes document is clear as to what is done at each site. So we're going to be reviewing this to see if there's additional reductions that could take place. So for instance, if you are a single site organization that does not do any design and development, then there's a 20% audit duration. If you're multi-site and one of your sites does not do any management and doesn't do any control of externally provided processes or purchasing, then with those two together, there could be a 25% audit reduction. So it's very clear that your interaction of processes can demonstrate what's done at each site so that we can do a proper analysis of any additional audit duration reductions. Okay, now per the standard, 85165D says, the total reduction by site after all adjustments, including rounding, shall not exceed 50% of the audit durations per Table 8. So the most that we can reduce your audit time is 50% per the standard. And then 85166 says, to determine audit time, 20% shall be added to the total audit duration for all sites. This added time is used for OCAP analysis, audit planning, and report writing. So in addition to that audit duration, again, this is the time from the opening to the closing meeting. The standard also requires that 20% is added to not only do this analysis, this OCAP analysis, but also for any audit planning that the auditor has to do, any report writing time, that type of thing. So let's take a look at an example here. Let's say we're dealing with an organization that has a recertification audit coming up. They have 66 employees. We've determined that they're low risk level after taking a look at all of their documented information, and design is not applicable. So what we do is we go back up to that Table 8 here. There are 66 employees, so we look at the 66 to 85 bracket, and they're on the recertification audit, so their starting audit duration is 5.5. And after doing this risk analysis, we determine that they're low risk, which means that there's a 10% audit reduction. And we also determined that design and development is not applicable, so then there would be an additional 20% audit reduction. So, that 20% reduction for no design responsibility plus that 10% reduction for low risk would equal a total of 30% audit reduction. And that is determined by taking 30% of that 5.5 base audit time, which would be 1.65 day. So then what we do is we subtract 1.65 from 5.5, which brings us to 3.8. And we need to round to the nearest half day, which would be 4.0. So the base audit duration then is 4.0 audit days, and then we have to add that additional 20%. As let's see, that was clause 85166 requires. So then 20% of 4.0 is 0.8. So it would bring the total time to 4.8. And so this is how, in the new version of the standard, audit time needs to be calculated. All right. Any questions on anything? I didn't see any pop up, but if you have any, please feel free to type them in the question section there. And I'll just wait a few minutes in case anyone thinks of anything. Okay, we do have a question. Will you be sending out a copy of the slides? And I believe that we will be posting a recording of this presentation on our YouTube page. And so you'd be able to view the slides in that YouTube recording. Okay, I see another question. We are not affected if we are AS 9101 2015 certified. And Steve, I have to admit, I'm not familiar with that standard, AS 9101. Did I get that correct? AS 9101, or are you AS 9100, 9110, 9120? AS 9100. Steve, so your certification would be affected. So for PJR's AS 9104 one certification is for us to provide certifications to AS 9100, 9110, or 9120 organizations. So these changes would affect an AS 9100 certified organization. Bianca asks if there will be a training certificate offered at the end. Bianca, I am not 100% certain. I don't believe so, but I can certainly check on that.
Amanda, I can actually jump in and clarify. We don't offer certificates for the webinars, but we can if you need to verify that an employee attended as part of an ongoing training or continuing education program. We can offer like verification that someone did attend, but we do not offer like a PDF certificate that there was someone in the webinar.
Okay, great. Thank you, Amy. So, Bianca, if you do need verification that someone attended, you can email Amanda Brown. Her email address is listed here, abrown@pgr.com, and we can provide that verification. Okay, and then I see another question. My auditor said that there was possibly going to be a merit-based system introduced in the new standard that would provide top-performing clients to reduce the frequency of audits. Is this true? No, that is not going to be true. There's no reduction in the frequency of audits. There still needs to be one surveillance audit per year, and then your recertification audit after two surveillance audits. Your auditor may have been referring to this table here, where we take a look at things like if you're, exceeding your on-time delivery, exceeding your product conformity, you don't have any customer complaints, and you're meeting your customer expectations, then those items will be considered low risk. And if you have your pairs were five, then this could all lead to a low risk determination, which would lead to that 10% reduction. He or she may have been referring to that, but unfortunately, there's no reduction in the frequency of audits. Okay, another question here. We just went through a recert audit and are currently finishing the NCRs, found all minors. Will this take place at our next audit? If you mean that if this of these new requirements will take place at your next audit, then that's correct. Yes, if you just finished your audits, then these requirements are not going to be applicable to that audit that was just finishing up. A question that says, will PGR tell us if we are AS9120? We currently are AS9100. And that is correct. We will be analyzing all the scopes of our clients. And if we see that an organization should be, for example, like you said, 9120 instead of 9100, we will let you know. Okay, another question here. Can you explain that 50% remote audit requirement? Is it mandatory for going 50-50 now, or 100% virtual is still possible? So 100% virtual is no longer going to be possible with the new version of the standard. And 50-50 is not required either. It's either going to be 100% on site, or 50% virtual and 50% on site. But if you have any of those virtual sites that we mentioned, then those would be audited virtually. I hope that answers your question. Okay, I don't think I'm seeing any other questions, and I think I answered everything there. But if I missed any questions or you think of anything else, please feel free to reach out to Amanda Brown, our Aerospace Accreditations and Program Manager, anytime. Oops, sorry. Her email address is listed here, abrown@pjr.com. So please feel free to write that down. And if you think of anything, please reach out and we can definitely help you out there. And we will also be letting you all know, letting our clients all know of any additional information that PJR finds out as we continue our transition into the new version of AS9104/1. And I'm just looking through those questions one more time to make sure I didn't miss anything. Okay, and I'm not seeing anything else. So thank you all for joining the webinar today. And again, if you have any questions moving forward, please feel free to reach out. You can reach out to Amanda Brown at abrown@pjr.com. Hope you all have a wonderful day.